Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Mattel is marketing its new Hello Barbie doll as a whole new way to interact with children. The $80 doll features a Wi-Fi-enabled voice box and uses cloud technology to access a database with over 8,000 questions and phrases. By pressing Hello Barbie's belt buckle, the doll immediately engages children in conversation. The interactive toy remembers details about the child, such as favorite colors, fruits, and candy. The doll can even remember deaths in the family or divorce and will steer conversations around upsetting topics. The more a child speaks to the doll, the more it can tailor its responses. The Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood says the doll is a threat to children's privacy, well-being, and creativity. The organization has started a Hell No Barbie campaign, 8 reasons to leave Barbie off the shelf. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about what happens when children are socialized by robots. With over 8,000 lines of recorded content ready to go, is the doll promoting genuine conversation or isolation? And how is technology affecting our children's emotional development? Today, we're joined by Josh Golan, Executive Director of Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. That's an organization that works for the rights of children to grow up and the freedom for parents to raise them without being undermined by commercial interests. Hi, Josh. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We are also joined by Sherry Turkle, professor of the Social Studies of Science and Technology at MIT and founder of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self. Sherry Turkle has authored many books on human relationships with technology. The crisis of conversation is at the heart of her latest book, Reclaiming Conversation: The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. She believes that sociable robots such as Hello Barbie offer pretend empathy. And Sherry Turkle joins us from New York. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you. So, Sherry, let's start off with you. You have been writing really amazing books and doing so much work on how technology is affecting our overall empathy and our ability to communicate. What was your initial reaction when you heard about this Hello Barbie doll?
Well, I've been waiting for this for decades, but of course, this is the first sociable robot, the first robot that pretends empathy. I mean, I think that's the best way to think about the genre. These are robots that are essentially doing that. They're pretending that they can empathize with us. My feeling was, okay, it's happened. And that it was time to really take the case to the people and explain in a much more forceful way why these are not good conversations for children to have.
And Josh, what were your thoughts? CNN has a piece called Talking Barbie is Too Creepy for Some Parents. And CNN did talk to a Mattel spokeswoman who said the company is just giving girls what they've always asked for, having a conversation with Barbie. What was your initial reaction when you heard about Hello Barbie?
Like so many people, my initial reaction was one of being creeped out. And I think that part of where that comes from is the fact that girls and children have always talked to their dolls, but they've done that through the power of their imaginations, and they talk very intimately to dolls. And the idea that these conversations were going to be listened to and analyzed by corporations just opens up a whole host of concerns and takes us into new territory that I found horrifying and fortunately, it seems like many parents agree with us.
Now, Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood director Susan Lin has said that kids using Hello Barbie are not only talking to a doll, they're talking directly to a toy conglomerate whose only interest in them is financial. Now, Mattel's collaborator on Hello Barbie is interactive toy company Toy Talk, and they have outlined the doll's privacy policy and says they have no interest in storing personal information in their servers. Instead, they say it'll be available in the doll's companion smartphone app, where parents can configure all kinds of things like religious beliefs. They can encourage conversation topics. So what do we know about the privacy of this doll?
Well, there's a lot of vague language in the privacy policy, which is extremely concerning. So Toy Talk has said that they are going to share these recordings of the conversations with third parties. They won't say who those third parties are. We know that the conversations are going to be listened to at sometimes by live people. We don't know who those live people are. Are they going to be from these third parties as well? The other thing that we don't know is whether these conversations are going to be mined for market research. Observing children's play is a very powerful tool and window into children's hearts, minds, and emotions, and it's something that psychologists do frequently to order to better understand what children are thinking and what they're dealing with. Are these conversations going to be mined in order to fine-tune products that can be marketed to children? We don't know that because the privacy policy is so vague.
And Sherry, what concerns you about the privacy policy? I understand that Hello Barbie will ask things like, what do you want to be when you grow up? How many brothers and sisters do you have? I mean, very personal information.
Yeah, and I think that, we know from the privacy policy about every other thing we use that, we're not in control of the shifting and changing privacy policies of every app, on which we're, ordering pizza. Turns into something that's gaining information about where we are, our movements around the city, who our friends are. What the privacy policy is today is not the privacy policy of tomorrow, and this is gaining the most sensitive information about our children and encouraging them to share the most intimate details of our lives. I mean, this is a bad idea, on so many levels, but let me just take it back a step. When you introduce a doll like this, you have to ask yourself the question, is what possible good can come from this? And I'm arguing that this is a doll where no possible good can come from these interactions, because as Josh so rightly points out, when a child, and much harm, because when a child plays with a doll that is not an AI, is not an artificial intelligence, the child's imagination makes that doll an object where the child projects onto the doll who he or she is, wants to be, what's on their mind. So a little girl who's just broken, I've watched so many of this, so much of this, a little girl who's just broken her mother's china will put all of her Barbies in detention, in order to punish the Barbies for what's on her mind. But this is a doll that has an agenda and really closes down the imaginative play. And this is an interaction where children behave as though the doll had empathy to offer. But the doll has no empathy to offer. It has pretend empathy to offer. And that is toxic. Pretend empathy is something toxic when a child needs real empathy. So even before a parent says, oh, I'm wondering about the privacy policy, a parent should say, this isn't good for children.
Hmm. Talk a little bit more about the research that you've done, because there have been so many studies about how children are using more technology than ever. I'm trying to find the one that came out a couple weeks ago, that some children are now spending more time on their computers than they are sleeping, because
Yes.
It's so easy to take these devices to bed with them.
Yes.
What sort of research is being done right now to find out how this is affecting? Let's talk first about empathy. How is it affecting empathy?
Well, let's talk first about empathy. There's a kind of empathy gap among children. This is the focus of Reclaiming Conversation, is on the empathy gap in children, which becomes so bad that by the time they're in college, we see a 40% decline in all the ways we know how to measure empathy.
Wow.
Over the past 20 years in college students. And it's been dramatically greater in the past 10 years, so that the researchers link this empathy gap to the presence of digital devices, which makes sense because we learn empathy, and this gets us back to the Barbie and why I am so animated about the question of the Barbie and the notion of pretend conversation, is we learn empathy by talking to each other. you know, even on the phone, I'm putting myself in your place. I'm putting myself in Josh's place. We're trying to understand genuinely these three lives, how we've come to this place, how human lives have come to this place, and why we're, you know, coming together as we are. That's how human beings learn empathy. A doll that has not known the arc of a human life can't do that. So teenagers who spent their lives interacting with digital objects that have no empathy to give are putting themselves at risk, and I think that's why we're seeing this empathy gap.
So here's an interesting one to pose. A small survey of parents in Philadelphia found that 3/4 of their children had been given tablets, smartphones, or iPods of their own by the age of 4. And they're using these devices without supervision. And NPR had a great story, I think it was last year. Children, sometimes they're throwing their parents' cell phones in the toilet because they're tired of being ignored. And so some of the parents are giving their kids these devices. So Sherry, would you rather have a child use a device in isolation that doesn't talk to you, or this Barbie that does talk to you? I mean, what would you say
is worse? These are not our choices. These are not our choices. I'm studying families where the children, as you so rightly put it, are pulling at their parents' sleeve for attention because parents are on their devices and the children are basically saying, talk to me, right. Talk to me. So the parent has to put down his or her device and turn to the child and give the child what the child needs to develop that basic human skill that makes us human, which is empathy, by talking to your child. There are baby bouncers and potty trainers that have slots for tablets and phones. These are the moments when children need eye contact and conversation and the capacity for reverie and imagination. These are not moments when screens should be in front of children and their parents.
Josh, what would you add to that? I mean, it's happening. That's the thing. I mean, another survey, Common Sense Media, 72% of kids 8 or younger used a mobile device.
Yeah, it is happening, and it's unfortunate, but I think it's something that we all need to push back on, and we need to ask ourselves, is this what we want for our children? I think the Philadelphia survey study that you point to is a really interesting one because it was done with low-income families, predominantly African-American families. And one of the things that's happening is that these devices are being sold as a way to narrow the achievement gap, to make up for other resources that families don't have. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, that's the exact opposite approach that we should be going at it, particularly with young children. It's not that children need to be on iPads in order to get ready for kindergarten. They, as Sherry so powerfully points out, they need to have conversations with family. They need to have creative play. They need to have time to build their imaginations and their social skills. And so one of the things that's happening is, the iPad, the tablet, is being marketed as the new cure-all for all our ills and what's going to narrow real inequality that we have in our society. And, of course, that's not going to happen. And so I think one of the things that we all need to do is to really is to amplify the fact that in more well-to-do families in places like Silicon Valley, you actually have parents who are being much more conscious about the way these devices are introduced to their families. And so, the marketing machine that's telling parents that this is what you need to get your child a leg up, I think it's really important that we counter those messages and talk about what kids really need.
I think it's very telling. I couldn't agree with Josh more about the class and inequality implications here. I think it's very telling that in Steve Jobs' family, there were no iPhones. There were no iPads. There was a dinner table without devices.
Right.
I've just come back from a book tour on reclaiming conversation, and now I'm back in New York, and in California, in Silicon Valley, there is, in those families, in the wealthy families there are very strict rules, just as Josh is saying, against using computers to interfere with conversations. Because we know that when the seductive power of having a device in front of you. As a matter of fact, there's thrilling research that shows that if you put a phone on the table between you and the person you're talking to, two things happen. The conversation becomes more trivial, and you lose an empathic connection between you and the person you're talking to. Now, if you don't want that to happen, you have to put away your phone when you're talking. Now, put this in the context of a young child who's just developing those capacities for connection and for empathic connection, who's just developing the skill of learning through conversation. They can't afford to have phones on the table.
So have researchers looked at what a loss of empathy looks like when it begins at age 3 or 4?
Yes, absolutely. It looks like in Reclaiming Conversation, I talk about middle schools that have called me in middle schools and below, that have called me in to look at children who don't seem to be developing the most basic understanding of what other children are saying and feeling. So that on the internet, we see it all the time. On the internet, we say terrible things to each other and somehow feel that the person is like a thing that won't be hurt. And then in real life, it's now that you bring those horrible internet habits into your face-to-face communications. We say things to each other that are cruel.
Wow.
We don't make eye contact. We don't behave as though we understand the impact of our words and our actions on the people that we are talking to. And this comes from a life where we text each other instead of looking at each other and seeing, you know, what I'm saying is having an impact on the person I'm saying it to. I'm reminded of a family that did a very wise thing, since I must say Reclaiming Conversation is an optimistic book, because like Josh, I believe we can turn it around. I believe we can turn this around and that it's not too late, because I find many families, although they're kind of going along with the tide, they're feeling as though they're not comfortable with what's going on. They feel that we've overstepped, and they're waiting, I think, for leadership and the kind of information you're providing in this program and that these articles are providing that says, listen, you can have a movement, a consumer movement, to turn things around. I was raised on Wonder Bread and, you know, and little fruit bits that were floating and syrup and on, you know, only canned vegetables, also in sort of salty syrup. And I have a daughter, and if I served her any of those things, I would be shunned. America consumers said to industry, we don't want this. This is not good for us. We're getting sick. It's making our children sick. And I believe that it's not going to happen overnight, but there is going to be a similar consumer movement for children and toys. Because look, research shows that in only 5 days at a camp, at a device-free summer camp, where you can't bring a phone or a laptop or a tablet, those empathy levels start to go back up. Those empathy levels start to go back up because we are meant to be, we are wired to be empathic creatures.
Sherry Turkle is professor of the Social Studies of Science and Technology at MIT and the founder of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self. She's authored several books on our relationship with technology. The crisis of conversation is at the heart of her latest book, Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. Josh Golan is executive director of Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, an organization that works for the rights of children to grow up without being undermined by commercial interests. CFC is out with a campaign called Hell No Barbie, 8 Reasons to Leave Hello Barbie on the Shelf. This is a new Wi-Fi-enabled $80 doll. It uses cloud technology to access a database with over 8,000 questions and phrases. By pressing on the Hello Barbie belt buckle, the doll immediately engages children in conversation. So what are your thoughts about children interacting with a doll like Hello Barbie, for example, how do you make decisions about giving electronic devices to your children, whether it's an iPad or a phone? And what do you think about these new toys with artificial intelligence built in? Because you know that if Hello Barbie takes off, we're going to see so many of these talking dolls. So what questions do you have about these kinds of interactive toys? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Josh, what are you hearing from parents about these issues? Because, I mean, the fact is, a lot of parents, and we'll talk about the class issues, that's really important, but a lot of parents give the child an iPad to play with. I mean, I see this constantly, you know, regardless of where I am, restaurants, stores, cars, you name it. So what are you hearing from parents right now?
You know, what we hear a lot from parents is that somehow the culture has changed 180 degrees and they don't even realize that they opted into it. And almost every parent that we, you know, that if you talk to them about their relationship with technology, if you talk to them about their children's relationship with technology, they have concerns. They may not know what to do about it. They may be addicted to technology themselves. But, you know, almost everybody, and I think this is why, you know, Sherry's work is so important, almost everybody is concerned about where we're going and how we've gotten to this moment where a family goes out to a restaurant and they're paying quite a bit for a meal and four people are on four different devices and they're not ever, you know, making eye contact with each other. Now, families may be doing that, but if you push them and you ask them, you know, is that really the way you want to have your family dinners? Almost everybody says no. And so I think that part of it is just giving people support, giving them encouragement, and really not only looking at this as what can we do in our own homes, but how can we make this a cultural and a societal issue where the cultural norm is when you go out to dinner, you talk to each other, and we get that back. And I do think I share Sherry's optimism. I share it because so many people are concerned about this issue. It's not, even if their behaviors are not yet reflecting that concern, every parent, you know, thinks that something is amiss.
Sherry, what is the difference between different generations? So when I was younger, we would watch TV. Now, the difference is when we would be driving or going to a restaurant, we obviously couldn't watch TV in the car or the restaurant, whereas kids now can use the device. But what's the difference between that sort of virtual babysitter back then of just throwing on the TV because mom is really busy versus giving the kid an iPad because mom's busy?
Well, I think that the example of the television is so wonderful because it shows that technology, and this I think speaks to Josh's point as well about the possibilities for change. A technology can be what you make of it. So in my family, watching Game of Thrones with my daughter and her friends, in fact, is kind of a contact sport. My head is in her bosom because I can't stand the frightening parts. We're talking about it, we're laughing about it. If we're watching, you know, if we're watching it in a delayed form, we're stopping it to, you know, to recoup and to eat something and to calm down. And I mean, what's on the screen can be a time to be creative, work together, and goodness knows there's so much that comes to us on screens that are, you know, objects around which we can be creative and work together and do, you know, fantastic creative work. So I think what Josh and I are talking about is not a condemnation of the culture of screens or of computational devices or of enjoying the fruits of this wonderful new, you know, technological revolution. What we're talking about is a use of a device that really is stopping the conversations that count and the relationships that count in families, in homes, at work, with yourself in solitude. The most important conversations are conversations you have often with yourself in creativity and self-reflection. And if you're constantly going to a device rather than allowing that to happen, those will be blocked. But I think it's important to say that this is not about, you know, throw away your phones, throw away your screens. It's about using them with learning to use them now that we've had some experience with them, you know, learning to use them sensibly. So the fuss about Hello Barbie, for me, is a kind of line in the sand. The fuss about a potty trainer that has a slot for an iPad is a line in the sand. I just saw a sling for a nursing mother to be able to text while she's nursing instead of making eye contact with the baby. That's a line in the sand.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't have to do with there being anything wrong with texting or there being, you know what I'm saying? Mm. This has to do with the moments that we're using this technology. And, you know, and my favorite line in Reclaiming Conversation is kind of author's choice is, technology makes us forget what we know about life. You know, we know that we need to make eye contact with our children. We know that we need to talk to them. And we know that we need to talk to each other to build a human being. That's how we make a human being that we recognize as a loving human being who will be able to understand us. So we're forgetting what we know about life. And I think it's kind of natural that this very seductive technology kind of took us away from that. And now it's time to remember just what we know about life. Mm.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on these issues? How are you making decisions about giving devices to your kids? And what questions do these toys like Hello Barbie with artificial intelligence built in raise for you? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. If you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. If you'd prefer to write your question or comment, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, the BBC's World Have Your Say. At noon, backstory. Following that at 1 o'clock, it's alternative radio. And then at 2, a full hour of headlines and analysis from the BBC on NewsHour.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about diversity in children's literature and publishing. Many children identify with characters in the books they read, but what happens if these characters do not represent them? What needs to change in the publishing industry to ensure all children have access to books and characters they can connect with? So we're going from Hello Barbie to actually reading books on tomorrow's show. We hope you can join us. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about children using technology and this Hello Barbie. It's a Wi-Fi enabled $80 doll that is being marketed as a doll that interacts uniquely with children by holding conversations, playing games, even telling jokes. And there's so many concerns about this new doll. So what questions do you have about this? How do you make these decisions when it comes to buying devices for your children or maybe grandchildren or friends and then letting them use it? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. How has it affected their ability to communicate, their empathy, maybe even the conversations that you have with them? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Sherry Turkle, professor of the Social Studies of Science and Technology at MIT. Her latest book is Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. Josh Golan is executive director of Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. They are out with a campaign called Hell No Barbie, 8 Reasons to Leave Hello Barbie on the Shelf. And let's hear from Marie in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. This is Marie-Louise, and I, for a long time, I've been thinking about and noticing children in different places, often in strollers, where they will have a parent pushing them, speaking on the telephone, and of course there could be other places as well. One time I actually observed a parent with a child in a grocery cart, and for over a half an hour, I wasn't standing there as a spy, but I happened to be shopping at the same time. For over a half an hour, this happened to be a mother, talked on the phone, and her girl was sitting in the grocery cart. And so my thought is, I think these children are trained to not listen because it's not for them. You know, they're not being spoken to. So, yeah, that's an observation. I think it could be really, really very disturbing in the future when these children who've been used to telephones and other kinds of devices so much. And I expect that maybe it'll be the parents that will throw the Barbie in the toilet.
Well, thank you. I mean, you bring up some good points here. Josh, what are your thoughts on this? What does the research tell us about how this affects children's listening skills?
I think probably the biggest thing that it has an impact is it tells the child that the other conversation is more important than being with the child there in the moment. And I think that's one of the real concerns about, parents being so glued to their devices when they're with their children. And then if you compound it by giving the child their own device, what you're saying is that remote relationship is more important than being there in the moment, that's more important than, particularly with young children, observing things together. The shopping experience is a tremendous learning experience to talk about what you see in the grocery store, to pick things off the shelf and feel them and talk about them. And so that moment gets lost, and the child gets taught that the person on the other end of that phone or that text is more important than them that right there in the moment.
Right. And Sherry, it also raises questions of acknowledgement. Because anytime I'm with my 5-year-old niece, watch me do a somersault, watch me jump, watch me dance. And you have to say, oh, that was nice. And if you're doing something else, she'll say, hey, you didn't see it, watch. And so if you're on your phone, chances are you're sort of going, uh-huh, yeah, that's good. How does that affect
the child? I'm sort of like trying to figure out where to start. It teaches that there's no acknowledgement, but it teaches something even deeper and more dangerous. There's research by Ed Tronick, classic research in developmental and the earliest and deepest developmental issues, that if a mother presents a still face to a child, from a baby to through toddlers and older, if you present a still face to a child, the child will first do everything to amuse the mother, to get the mother's attention, will become charming and seductive, then will become angry, then will become depressed, and finally will just slouch and just stare ahead blankly. And we're seeing this behavior when mothers are on their phone, which has become the equivalent of modern still face behavior with children. And its effects are pathological. It induces pathology. It's not just that it teaches that, I'm not here for you today. I mean, a mother who is always looking at a phone instead of looking at their child is presenting continually something like a still face to a child, a face that says, I'm not being responsive to you, I don't care. My advice to mothers who go to the playground with their child and who are on their phones and will not look up to their child when the child is trying to get their attention, when they do something fantastic on the jungle gym or the swing, is to limit the amount of time they go to the playground. Don't bring the device with you. Only go to the playground for the amount of time that you can leave the device at home, because you're doing more damage by going for 3 hours or 2 hours and spending that time on your device.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Marie-Louise. Let's go next to Dinesh in Santa Clara. Hi, Dinesh. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I had some questions. One is, I think this march of technology is inevitable, no matter what we do. I'm not sure whether we can halt or reverse that. We are going to see more toys and more such devices and gadgets that interact better and become a proxy. But I guess the real reason it creates a fear amongst us is because this acts like a crutch to regular social interaction, listening, and conversation, which I would argue has already been waning away right from the time of television to other devices and going forward. So isn't it, rather than just this doll, isn't it a much larger problem we need to address in terms of behavior, and also perhaps training in a systematic way of how do even parents engage with children? Because often parents find it extremely tough to engage with children continuously, given their energy and their other demands. So how does one prioritize to make sure that this crutch doesn't really cause a disability?
Do you have children, Dinesh?
Yes, I do.
And how do you deal with
boys?
How do you deal with this?
Yeah, we have. We try our best. We don't like, for example, we haven't taken our kids to movies ever. They are, you know, still. We encourage them to read books. We try to spend as much time with them as possible and limit their device usage. It's I would ideally like to eliminate it, but it's really impossible to do that. But we limit their device usage to the extent possible.
And I'm guessing they're young.
Yes, they are. They're 8 and 4. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in. Sherry, do you want to take that one first?
Yeah, I think it's very important to make sure that listeners hear what Josh and I are saying as not being anti-technology. In my case, the way I like to put it is I'm not anti-technology, I'm pro-conversation. So television, great, but, you know, I'm suggesting the television can be something that's open for conversation. It doesn't have to be something that's socially isolating. There are many things to do with screens that are very, very high tech. My God, I work at MIT. It's magical, the things that are being developed that are artistic, that are fun, that open the world to you. I love this stuff. What we're talking about here are devices that take people away from the nurturing and helpful and necessary conversations that will turn them into competent and loving and empathic people. So here are here's my tips, is that there simply should be no devices in the kitchen. There should be no devices in the dining room or when people go out to dinner. These are times for conversation. Mm. And there should be no devices in the car. The car can be a place for conversation. The person who's driving is not texting. I mean, here, that's a kind of,
we hope, and
increasingly, you know, we really can't afford the parental deaths.
Right.
We can't afford to lose these people. Again, this is something where, you know, we think we know how to control the technology, and we do stupid things with it, and then gradually we get better and more respectful of it. And I think we will get more respectful of it. I think we're on a learning curve. I think that's what Josh was describing when he says that he talks to people and they say they're doing something, but they feel something is amiss. I think we're on a learning curve. Just as we were on a learning curve about how to use cars, cars didn't start out with seatbelts and airbags and speed limits and rules of the road. And they didn't start out that way. They didn't even start out with windshield wipers. I mean, you know, they didn't start out that way at all. But we got better at figuring out, well, how are we going to use these cars in ways that will serve our human purposes? And I think that's what we're doing now with the digital world. We're learning how to make these objects serve us better. So in your car, that's a place where you create a family culture that this is where we're talking because we need to talk. And no, when, you know, I've interviewed children who tell me that they have never taken a walk to the corner store with their mother or their father where there wasn't also a device in that parent's hand. And that's not okay. And so, you know, we have to learn that we leave our devices at home when we just, or in our pockets or in our pocketbooks, and we just turn them off in order to have conversations with our kids and with each other. And I think we're going to get better at it because we're going to start to see the costs in much more dramatic ways you know, with children who really don't know how to make eye contact, how to talk to each other, how to care about what each other are saying, because they wouldn't have had practice in what teaches them how to learn these things.
Well, we've got a couple of emails, one from a college professor who wants to talk about this. But first off, Marie writes, I bought my grandchildren 11 and 9 an iPad last Christmas and somehow wish I had not. The addictive pull of this device is amazing. Even though some limits are put on its use, the children's mind is so focused on using it, they seem to have forgotten all the other items that used to fill their time. Incredible. Another listener writes in, I'm so glad the woman called to report about her experience seeing mothers pushing strollers while glued to a phone. I see it all the time, everywhere I go. Disturbing and depressing, to say the least. And then Carla says, I've been teaching at the college level for 18 years, mostly at a junior college, but also local universities. I have seen students more and more distracted in the classroom and almost resenting the fact that I will not allow their phones to be visible or on during class time. I'm finding a higher and higher percentage of them nearly unable to be present, to be engaged with attention in a way necessary to learn the material I present. Josh, what are your thoughts on that? And, I'm guessing there's going to be so many studies looking at two-year-olds and three-year-olds who use these devices and find out how it affects them in the classroom when they're, say, 18 or 20.
Yeah, and I actually wanted to get back to a point from the caller before that, because I think it relates to some of those comments you just read, where he said parents are busy and they're tired and, you know, they're not able to interact with their children at every moment. And of course they're not. Especially the more, you know, parents are working longer and longer hours. But I think that's a false dichotomy that gets set up sometimes. And one of the things that that it's really important is that, particularly with young children, is that they learn how to play by themselves or with a sibling without screens. And so they learn how to be bored and how to figure out what to do with their boredom. They learn how to, as Sherry talked about earlier, have conversations with themselves and their own thoughts. And one of the things about these devices is that they're so powerful and they're so mesmerizing that once we give them to kids, whenever there's a moment of boredom, that blocks out everything else. So when the woman who wrote in who has a 9 and 11-year-old and they're not using their other toys anymore, they're not engaging in other activities. So I think that's, one of the things that we really need to do, particularly with young children, is obviously you can't not be on the floor. No parent can be on the floor every moment interacting with their toddler or, never letting them have a moment to themselves. But those moments to themselves don't need to be moments with these powerful screens. They can be moments where children are figuring out what exactly do they need to do with want to do with their next moment. What toys do they want to play with? How do they want to negotiate the rules of a game with a sibling? How do they want to have an imaginary conversation with a doll, not a fake one with a Hello Barbie? So I think that in addition to reclaiming conversation, we need to help children reclaim boredom.
Well, and to that point, Karen writes in, for you, Sherry, parents should personally interact with their children at all times in an ideal world. Unfortunately, the press of daily life makes this untenable. While I would have concerns about the corporate storage of data from a child using this Hello Barbie doll, I otherwise do not see a crisis. Karen goes on to say, by the way, I'm old enough to remember perhaps the first iteration of a talking doll, Chatty Cathy. You'd pull a string and the doll would say phrases like, I'm hungry or I love you. Are there any studies about the collapse of civilization from the use of Chatty Cathy?
Well, let me just say two things. First of all, to this caller's point and to Josh's, boredom and the importance of boredom is crucial to my argument in reclaiming conversation and to my work as a whole. There is, when you experience boredom, your brain is not bored. Your brain is laying down what's called the default mode network, which is the basic sense of your autobiographical self. Children need the experience of boredom desperately. And cutting it short by putting a screen in front of them is, in fact, one of the most toxic effects of, what people call the pass back, kind of passing back the iPhone to a child in the back seat of the car who's saying, I'm bored, I'm bored. The response to I'm bored is, that's great. Go into your reverie. That's what childhood is for. So I just want to, second the emotion of what Josh was saying about boredom. I also want to say that the responsibility to give children, to give parents some time to play with their children, also has to go to the leaders, our corporate leaders, who have to begin to create a corporate culture where people are not expected to show devotion to their jobs by being online 24/7. I mean, we also have to begin to develop a way of relating to this world of devices as grown-ups that makes it clear that being on them all the time is not what we think of as good for productivity, because in fact, studies show very clearly that it is not, and that conversation in the workplace and time to have a thought, to do some thinking rather than constantly being communicating, is good for the bottom line. And on this question of this caller about Chatty Cathy, Chatty Cathy, no doll, I've studied Chatty Cathy and I've studied other kinds of dolls. There is no young girl who was with Chatty Cathy who thought that Chatty Cathy, with its sound box that you could see in the middle of its belly, that so clearly had a little record playing in the middle of its belly, was actually talking with her, was an empathic thinking little person. You knew you pulled a string, it was something mechanical, and something came out of its mouth. It was a mechanism. And where this line has been drawn, I mean, the first question you asked me is, what has happened now that has kind of made you upset? What's your reaction? Is we've now created objects where we can convince children that there really is an other there that is talking to them and it's worthy of conversation. And that's a different thing altogether.
And Hello Barbie, Josh, is receiving so much media attention for many of the reasons that we're talking about on today's show. But what do you see coming? What's next in terms of artificial intelligence in toys and games for children?
Well, I mean, we really think this is going to, you know, the entire toy industry is watching to see what happens with Hello Barbie, which is one reason why, you know, we're spending so much time and energy trying to educate people about why this is a terrible toy. The toy industry is a copycat industry, and if Hello Barbie is the smash hit of this holiday season, you can expect that there will be a lot fewer dolls that don't have this kind of technology in the future, a lot fewer dolls that encourage the kind of creativity and truly interactive play where a child is interacting with their imagination that children need, and a lot more of these dolls that are recording and doing God knows what with the children's sensitive data.
Well, we have time for one more call, and thank you so much for those emails. Let's go to Stephanie in Oakland. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
My question just is, I love this topic, but has there been any study on children with disabilities, such as autism, for this particular toy? Would it be beneficial, you know, to allow them to come out of their shell when possibly they're not able to?
Sherry, is there research on that?
Yes. In fact, there's a very active research group and at MIT that tries to use this whole technology in the field of autism. And I think there I would have to say the jury is out, and this needs to be watched closely, because obviously that's a different situation, and the parameters are different, and the whole research goal of using artificial intelligence to work with the autistic it's not just Hello Barbie or this particular toy, but it's a whole area of whether or not manipulation of the visual and auditory field of somebody who suffers with this problem is helpful or not. So I would have to say that my comments here are about this as a general toy for a healthy population.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. We'll take a look at that. I believe there is a lot of work being done with AI for kids with autism. So
yes.
We'll take a look at that, and maybe we can do a show. Just quick question, Josh. Some boys like to play with Barbie, but it's mostly girls. Do you think that a talking G.I. Joe, for example, is in the works?
As I said, I think that the toy industry is watching this very closely, and I would expect that, if Hello Barbie is a huge hit, we will see this kind of technology in just about every toy imaginable.
Wow.
I think there's some frightening.
But Josh and I are plotting how to put our bodies between this moment and that happening.
So, Josh, your organization Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood is running this campaign, Hell No Barbie, 8 Reasons to Leave Barbie on the Shelf. We don't know yet. Maybe we should do a show after the holidays to see how this thing sold. But where is this going from here?
What happened is when the doll first was announced in the spring, we did a campaign asking Mattel not to release the doll for all the reasons that we're talking about today. 45,000 people signed petitions to Mattel urging them not to release the doll, but unfortunately, they decided to go ahead and do it anyway. So now what we're, doing is a public education campaign. And one of the things that we're really asking people to do is to talk to, it's not just about not buying this for your own child. It's about, letting relatives know that not to buy it for your child, but also let them know not to buy it for other people, because of all the reasons we've talked about today, that this is this represents a dangerous cultural shift, a dangerous in toys that are spies on children and pretending to be, as Sherry has so eloquently said, something that they're not. And so we really think that it's up to parents to be counter marketers on this toy, because Mattel has a lot of money behind this, and obviously children are going to want this. It sounds like something that to a child is going to sound amazing.
And it's an $80 toy. Josh Gullin, Executive Director of Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, and Sherry Turkle, author of Reclaiming Conversation, The Power of Talk in a Digital Age. And thank you both for joining today's conversation.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Jura Call, we'll have a conversation about diversity in children's literature. Many children identify with characters in the books that they read, but what happens if these characters do not represent them? How can we promote diverse literature in the classroom? And what needs to change in the publishing industry to ensure all children have access to books and characters they connect with? It's Jura Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.